Hello, listeners, and welcome to Fighting Failure, the podcast where we discuss solutions to the climate crisis. This episode is all about how we heat our homes, and I'm very proud to introduce a special guest, Michael Thomas. Michael, can you introduce yourself and what you do, please?
Sure. So my name is Michael Thomas. I'm the founder of Carbon Switch. One way that I describe what we do is we're building something like a wire cutter or consumer reports for home electrification and efficiency.
Cool. So could you explain for the listeners, how does a heat pump work?
Absolutely. So the way to think about a heat pump is as a refrigerator in reverse. So the phrase heat pump sort of comes from this idea that what it's going to do is literally pump heat out of one place and into another. So that's the way a refrigerator works, is you've got this space where your food is kept and there's this heat within there, and there's a refrigerant and a compressor that pushes all of the hot air out, and what's left is cold air. So the same process can be used to basically cool an entire home, and then that process can be used in reverse to heat a home. So you can take some of the air outside that even on a cold day still has some warmth to it until it gets to absolute zero, and you can pump some of that warm air from the outside atmosphere into your home and heat it. And what that results in is a heating and cooling system, or HVAC unit, that is as much as four times more efficient than a typical furnace or your AC unit.
And so when you have this heat pump unit, the same unit can both heat and cool, is that correct?
That's correct. So your furnace only heats your home, your air conditioner only cools your home. A heat pump does both. It's sort of a two-in-one combo.
Mm-hmm. And the efficiency statistics you quoted there, is that for one heat pump or sort of one heat pump system versus both air conditioning and heating combined in a traditional manner?
Sort of. So the 4X that I referenced is actually referring to the coefficient of performance. And the COP is what it's called. The way that that works is that in a typical heating unit, you put in one therm of natural gas, maybe, or you bring in 1 kilowatt hour from the grid into your home, and you get, let's say, 0.9 units of heat out. So once it's kind of gone through its process in the furnace and burned that fossil fuel, or it's gone through your baseboard heater, you've actually lost some energy. A heat pump is kind of crazy because it almost, I won't say creates energy because that's impossible, but what it does is it takes in one unit of energy, puts it through this compressor, and it's able to spit out 4 units of heat because it's using only a little bit of energy to run this compressor and this refrigerant. And doing that is basically going to pull in some of the heat that's already outside. So you're, by not creating heat, but instead of moving it, you get this way more efficient system.
Yeah, because with a furnace, you're burning natural gas or fuel oil or whatever. You're burning that to release the heat energy. Whereas in the heat pump, you're using the electricity to move heat from one place to another, right?
That's exactly right.
One problem with air conditioners and fridges is sort of those refrigerant substances, which can leak and are horrible greenhouse gases. You have, you know, your chlorofluorocarbons, hydrofluorocarbons. These sort of F gases can tens of thousands times worse than CO2 in the atmosphere. How do you sort of prevent this with heat pumps?
Sure. So to your point, there are refrigerants in a lot of heat pumps that create a really potent greenhouse gas that's as many as a few hundred times more intense as a warming gas than CO2. The truth is that a lot of heat pumps have this today, and there's a lot of R&D being done to change that and prevent it. But it's one of the challenges with heat pumps that remains sort of unsolved. How can you get a refrigerant that's both safe, economically viable, and doesn't release these horrible greenhouse gases? Now, it is still way better for the environment to have a heat pump, since not all of these gases leak out. Like, the bad thing is when a heat pump is thrown away, like an air conditioner unit, which all air conditioner units have the same one, the same refrigerant. It leaks and it warms up the atmosphere. It's only if it's disposed of improperly. So if you dispose of heat pumps properly, you don't lose that gas into the atmosphere. So there is a way that you can still have net benefits on climate, and it's way better for the environment to have a heat pump.
Interesting. And you mentioned, in terms of different refrigerant gases, you mentioned economic viability. And something that faces a lot of green solutions is the green premium. It is more expensive to get an electric vehicle nowadays. But do heat pumps face the same problem? Because you said they're much more efficient. Does it change over the long term? How does the economic argument work out with a heat pump?
Yeah, so it does have a green premium. It is more expensive to buy a heat pump up front than, say, a gas furnace or a boiler. And in many cases, over the long run, that pays for itself. So it's sort of like solar, where you might spend $25,000 up front to retrofit your home from a furnace with a heat pump. And over 20 years, you're going to save tens of thousands of dollars, and it's going to pay for itself. So there is a way that tens of millions of homeowners in the US, I don't know in other countries like the UK, but you can basically spread it with a loan payment over a long enough period of time, where even from day one, if you installed a heat pump, you would be spending less in those payments every month than the energy savings that you would get from the higher efficiency fuel. But in a lot of places, that isn't true. So it just has the green premium, just like buying a Tesla or putting solar in a place that doesn't actually have all that much sun. And that's where policy comes in, and why it's so important that we both increase the cost of fossil fuels to their true cost to society by like having a carbon tax, or by not subsidizing the fossil fuel industry. And then we also need to drive down costs through R&D, industrial policy, and rebates in the short term to help people get these things in their home.
And other than the cost of installing a heat pump and like buying it and installing it, are there any other costs other than electricity to having a heat pump?
No, the only other cost that comes up is that sometimes when you're installing a heat pump, you don't just need the heat pump. Like, let's say that you don't have ducts in your home, but you want to use an air source heat pump that requires duct work. Then you've got to do all of this carpentry work and change the duct work and all of that in your home. That adds up to the cost. If you are switching from fossil fuels to electricity, you might have to upgrade your panel. You might have to increase the insulation in your home to have more efficient heating and use a heat pump. And so all of those things add up to these sort of, you could call them the non-heat pump costs of installing a heat pump. And in a lot of cases, they can be more than the heat pump. So on a $30,000 quote that I just heard a friend got on a heat pump, $20,000 was duct work, and only $10,000 was the actual heat pump itself. So that's one of the big challenges, is that not every home is the same. So it's not quite like a Tesla, where anybody can go and buy a Tesla and driving, it's going to be pretty much the same, because you're just replacing a car. Almost all cars are similar in replacing them. Homes are all quite unique and different.
Yeah, and especially across continents, because the UK and US, as far as in my experience at least, is vastly different heating systems. I think like a lot of US homes use this sort of ducting system with hot air from a furnace, and that can be replaced with a heat pump. In the UK, we generally tend to have hot water pumped through radiators from a boiler. Does this change the equation for heat pumps? Do you need different types of heat pumps? Because you mentioned before, an air source heat pump, you need to have duct work. So do you know anything about how that could be implemented in the UK?
Yeah, so there are heat pumps that work without ducts. They're called, geniusly, ductless heat pumps, or mini splits. And I've actually got one in my office right here. If you've been to, like, on the continent in Europe, the hotels that have air conditioning units, they're usually a heat pump at one of these mini split ductless units. And the way that they work is that they don't require ducts. They just have these like little tubes or pipes that go right outside out of your walls. So in the UK, I don't know what the most viable one is since I haven't looked into that market as much, but that would be an option for people that don't have ducts, don't want to do that duct work. And those are actually cheaper usually than doing an air source heat pump. So the average cost in the US on some of those is like $8,000 to $10,000 for doing a ductless system in your house. And I know that the UK has actually gone really aggressively on heat pumps and is really trying to push them. And they've offered rebates and subsidies for homeowners. So the UK government is really trying to incentivize that and is doing one of the best things, which is just giving people money to install them in their homes.
Yeah. So would a ductless heat pump be sort of similar to an AC unit in that it just tunnels through the wall to an outside unit? So you'd need something separate for each room?
Yeah, that's right. So you end up having one unit for any given space. You could do it for like your whole living room or your basement or your bedroom, but there ends up being a few different units. They're technically called the air handler that then connects to the outside compressor and heat pump system.
Cool. And is there any way to use this heat pump technology to heat water rather than air?
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be very useful.
Yeah, so...
How does that work?
So water heating is about 20% of the energy that you use in a home. In the U.S., home energy is 20% of emissions. And so water heaters in the U.S. alone emit more carbon than all of our flights or all of the cargo that we've got. It's a massive amount just from heating water for our showers and our washing our hands, all these things. And something that people don't really think about all that much. So the way that people primarily heat their homes is either with a electric resistance water heater, that's about half the market, or a fossil fuel burning, whether it's natural gas, propane, or fuel oil water heater, that's another half of the market. And both of those are really inefficient. The electric resistance system puts a ton of load on the grid unnecessarily, and right now our grids aren't that clean. And then the fossil fuel ones just burn fossil fuels to heat up a water heater. So fortunately, there is a heat pump hot water heater, also referred to as a hybrid hot water heater. And these are similar to a heat pump HVAC system, 2 to 4 times more efficient. They're going to save people more over the long run. They use way less energy and way less carbon, and they're really a no-brainer. Unfortunately, they have a higher upfront cost, and so that's why they aren't really as popular. And they've also just really recently become more popular and more accessible for people.
So when I've talked about heat pumps in the UK, something I've heard quite often is that you need more insulation in order to be able to use a heat pump. So what steps can be taken to ensure widespread heat pump take up in areas where houses are old and uninsulated like they are here?
Yeah, so you make a great point that insulation is a really important part of the solution, the heat pumps. And the way that someone's described it to me is like every home is a living, breathing organism. Like they're all different. It's a system that interacts in all these different ways. So you can't just target one thing. It's sort of like, if you've ever been to the doctor and you've got a sore back and the doctor tells you, well, it's actually because you've got really tight hamstrings or something. It's because a body like a home is all connected. So you can't look at anything in isolation. And heat pumps are this way where, like I said, you might need ductwork or electrical panels. You also might need to improve the insulation to capture more of the heat or cooling. And this is something that's sometimes overlooked, but the good thing about it is that if you, let's say, spend a couple $1,000s on insulation, then you can install a cheaper heat pump. So you just need less BTUs of capacity. That's how heat pumps are kind of measured. Just like a solar panel has 1, 2, 3, 4 kilowatts of total capacity, a heat pump has 12, 24, 36,000 BTUs of capacity.
It's a British thermal unit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Or sometimes you might hear it referred to as 1 or 2 tons. So in the same way that if you could reduce your electricity usage before you install solar. You don't have to pay as much upfront for your solar panels because you just need less of them. Same is true with the heat pump, where spend a couple $1,000 on insulation, you can install a cheaper heat pump.
Mm-hmm. So changing tack a little bit. Saw the Vox video about heat pumps is really interesting, as saying like the market is areas that need to be both cooled and heated in different parts of the year. But for areas further north where you don't need cooling in the summer, but definitely need heating in the winter, are heat pumps still viable?
They are. So one of the myths of heat pumps is that they only work in moderate climates, which isn't true. Now there are these things that are cold climate rated heat pumps where they work as far north in the U.S. as Alaska. So I can't imagine anywhere in the U.K. is colder than Alaska. They work in Maine. They work in Florida, California, like every climate heat pumps work. But as temperatures go lower, that efficiency rating goes down. So that COP I mentioned earlier, coefficient of performance, might go from 400% in Florida down to maybe 125% in Alaska, or might dip down even lower on some of the coldest days. So the economic equation ends up being a little bit trickier the colder you get.
Okay. So when I was doing research about heat pumps, I've heard sort of these three terms floating around as ground source, air source, and water source. Do they have their own advantages and disadvantages or use cases? Do you mind explaining that?
Yeah. So the most common types of heat pumps are in order, air source heat pumps, ductless or mini split heat pumps, and then geothermal. Geothermal would be both the water and ground source one that you mentioned. And then the air source and ductless would be the air. And so I kind of think of it as like there's geothermal and there's the rest, like the ductless and the air source ones. Geothermal is its own beast in a sense, because like when you install a geothermal heat pump, you are digging a hole deep in your yard or really wide in your yard. You're laying a bunch of pipes where you're going to pump air or water through those pipes. And in the winter, the ground below your home go 100 feet down and it's actually quite warm. It stays moderate. In the summer, when it's really hot outside, up at the surface, it's a lot cooler down below. And so you can pump that temperature, whether it's cold or hot, that you want, and bring it up into your home. So that's definitely the most efficient in terms of annual operating costs and energy use. But you're drilling a hole in your yard and pulling, I mean, just doing like massive amounts of construction. So it could be 30 to 40 grand to do a system like that. And the benefits do pay for themselves over the long run, but not a lot of people have that money to put in up front.
Talking about money, how much further down do you think heat pump prices can be pushed with continued research and development and also with economies of scale?
It's a good question. I don't have a good answer for you in terms of like any raw numbers or data. I think one of the challenges that I would say is that heat pumps have actually been around for a while. So unlike something like solar or EVs, where we have this new technology that is coming down the cost curve as we learn more, or the learning curve. Heat pumps are actually fairly far down that learning curve because they've been around for decades. Like a heat pump is a refrigerator. Refrigerators were invented in the 30s or 40s or 50s, a long time ago. And so with heat pumps, that is one of the challenges, is that they've been around for a while. So it's not necessarily more scale that we need, but probably just new ways of thinking about it, new ways of manufacturing them. The other thing that is really important is that when you install a heat pump, you have both the hard cost, which is the technology, like the physical unit itself, which is equivalent to like a solar panel or a car. But then you've also got these soft costs, which is the construction, the labor of somebody installing it. And oftentimes the soft costs are two or three times the fixed cost. So in a $30,000 project, the heat pump's actually really cheap. It's paying the contractor and having them do all the labor that ends up being really expensive, or all the things that you need to do in addition to it. So there's a lot of levers to pull, and not all of them will be just like coming up with a more efficient heat pump unit, but thinking about how do we drive down the cost of installs, the time required, and ultimately make it easier to install these things.
Cool. So you mentioned earlier about how the UK government is pushing heat pumps, and they have recently introduced a £5,000, which is $7,000 incentive for people to buy heat pumps. Do you think that's good enough, or do you think we can do better?
I think it's a great start. The US is looking at a similar thing in our reconciliation bill that we're trying to get through Congress, where we would give people a similar amount between $2,500 and $5,000, depending on your income and how big your home is. And especially for people that are on the margins of the cost, that's going to help. But ultimately, it's actually not always the cost that's the barrier. Like, a lot of people just don't even know that heat pumps exist. They, even if you're a diehard environmentalist that has a ton of money to spare, you might just not know that this is a solution that that exists and could cut your carbon footprint. So I think we need more awareness in addition to the money. We also need better training for contractors, because oftentimes contractors are misinforming their customers, saying, oh, a heat pump wouldn't work here, it's too cold. Heat pump wouldn't work here, you don't have ducts or insulation. And they're not thinking about the whole system, either our climate system or our communities or our homes. And so I think there needs to be a push both to drive down the cost, give people some money, and also just train people and increase awareness around this and get kind of a national priority. So it's not just money and increasing the debt and spending a bunch of money, though that would help. But it's kind of looking at the whole system, which is obviously a much more complicated answer and harder to do.
That's actually a really interesting point you made about the awareness, because I've been into this sort of environment stuff for like years and years, but I only really found out about heat pumps in the last 6 months to a year. And I didn't really understand them until quite recently, really. So I think that's actually a really interesting point you make about awareness. It's definitely something we can push, because there's loads of articles online about, you know, how to reduce your carbon footprint. And I don't think I've seen heat pumps on many of them. So it's a really good point, actually. So to probably maybe already answer this, but in general, what can governments do to make heat pumps more widespread?
I think that the most important thing is ultimately going to be the cost of fuel and energy. So if you look at where there's mass adoption of heat pumps, it's the places where electricity or fuel prices are the most expensive. So I was just in Italy recently, and everywhere I looked, there was a heat pump. Like, every single home and apartment had it. And in a lot of places in Europe, the cost of electricity is more like 20 or 30 cents per kilowatt hour. In the US, it's as low as 10 cents per kilowatt hour. And so if you look at, should I install an electric resistance baseboard heating system or an electric furnace, which is really inefficient, or should I install a heat pump, that cost calculus, it makes sense to choose that inefficient system if your fuel and your energy is so cheap. And the same is true with natural gas. We have fracked natural gas in the US, just massive amounts of it, and so our gas is really cheap. In Europe and some places around the world, it's more expensive. And so that's the harder challenge to solve, where if you look at it from kind of a justice issue, how do you increase the cost of energy without disproportionately harming the people who can't afford that and are already burdened by these high energy bills? And yet, how do you drive adoption of heat pumps if you don't increase the fuel cost to make it make more financial sense? And so that's where I think a combination of both getting rid of fossil fuel subsidies, putting a price on carbon in some way, and then giving relief to people who are already burdened by high energy bills as a percentage of their income is the most pragmatic approach. How we can do that politically ends up being a lot harder challenge. So I guess, again, one of those complicated answers.
Yeah, there's recently been a huge rise in gas prices in the UK. I wonder if that could trigger some discussions
yeah.
in families or homes about using more energy, being more energy efficient and potentially installing heat pumps.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you mentioned carbon tax emissions trading scheme. Do you think this would help incentivize businesses as well as homeowners to make their heating more sustainable?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you knew that in 5 years or 10 years, carbon was going to cost $500 a ton, then it would be it would make a lot of sense to get a heat pump because you'd have this looming cost that's about to rise a lot. And so it just changes that calculation. Whereas today, a lot of people just can't be motivated to do it because it doesn't make sense financially. And if you want to increase adoption rates, the number that economists sort of look at where adoption rates go up is at about 5 years times payback period. So let's say that you install a heat pump, it costs you $10,000, but you saved $50,000 over 5 years, then a lot of people would do it. It'd be a great investment. But right now it's more like a 10 or 20 year payback. And so adoption rates are low. So the calculus of adoption rates and of these payback periods ultimately depends on what's the cost of your electricity, what's the cost of an alternative fuel, and what's the upfront cost of a unit.
So last point, what is your best case scenario for heat pumps and what effect would that scenario have on our emissions as a society?
Sure. So I guess to talk first about just the numbers and the opportunity, the best case scenario is we get every home to have a heat pump and we have 100% renewable grid by 2050. And if we did that in America, that would save 800 million tons of emissions, which is pretty close to 20%. It's like maybe 15 to 20% of our emissions today, because we emit about 6 billion tons per year. And most countries around the world have a similar kind of percentage of emissions from buildings, 20 to 40%. So if in a dream world where everybody electrifies everything in their home and we have 100% renewable grid, we reduce our emissions by 20%, which is massive. And so I think in terms of how we get there, the best case scenario is that as a country or as countries around the world, we just make it a really big priority. Saul Griffith, who recently wrote this book, Electrify, and has done some of the best work in this field to really popularize heat pumps and this electrify everything movement, has this idea of using the same model that we had in World War II around a national mobilization effort. Basically, what happened in World War II is countries like the UK, or Britain at the time, and the US and France all created this national mobilization, and they had everybody producing planes and bombs and all these things that were bad because it was war. But we could do that same thing if we considered the climate crisis as the emergency it was or is, and we could just try to produce as many of these things as possible at the lowest possible price and make it a national priority. And I think that just needs to happen on everything climate related. We need to make as many EVs as possible, build as many solar farms, build as much transmission, build as many heat pumps and install them and really take it all seriously.
Yeah, that's something I've actually thought about quite a lot is having, you know, in history lessons, learning about the war and the war effort. And yeah, that's something that's quite well publicized. And also then recently seeing the huge amount of funding that's gone into preventing the spread of COVID-19. It just doesn't really make sense in my head because COVID-19, the reason the government spent so much money is because it's a huge problem economically if the economy isn't be able to up and running. But climate change is basically that on a slightly longer timescale because, you know, rising sea levels and changing weather patterns, there's no way this isn't going to impact world productivity. For example, on a heating and cooling related basis, when it gets hotter and hotter in these sort of equatorial regions, it can become too hot for manual labor outside to be safe and comfortable. And that can drastically decrease economic productivity. So it doesn't really make sense why governments aren't putting in this huge amount of effort that they have put into COVID and 50 years, how long ago is it now, more than 50 years into the world wars. And I think it could be problematic politically to sort of conscript people into factories, but I think there is a lot we can do in the current political climate to make a huge impact, and it should be absolutely a big priority.
Totally. And it would have massive benefits immediately. We would put millions to work. We could do it with high-paying jobs, and we could clean up all of our air and water. And it's a no-brainer. All we need right now is the will, not only of politicians, but of all of us, of the populace, you know, of all of the people that are currently not taking it as their main priority or not pushing politicians and trying to get people elected. But that's one of the things I just try to push everybody to do is you don't have to install a heat pump, but you should show up for the election and vote. Only 25% of young people in America vote. That's a horrible thing. Everybody wants to be out in the streets protesting and we need climate action. Well, 75% more of us need to show up and vote. And we need to push people to actually act on this. And we all need to show up politically first and then in our own lives and kind of being the first customers and putting EVs in our home and solar and heat pumps and all of that.
Yeah, 400% more.
400%. That's right. Yeah.
It's a classic maths error.
Yeah.
Australia is terrible on its climate policy. But one thing I do have to give it credit for is for having compulsory voting and for having preferential voting, which is two things that means that it's probably not widely enough recognized amongst voters, but you don't have to have a two-party system. In countries like UK and US, you don't want to vote for a small party because it risks meaning that the party you don't want to get in gets in because you're splitting the vote of the parties you support. Preferential voting means that you can put the party you don't want to win at the very bottom, but might not be working based on current politics in Australia, but just something to know, I thought. Also, a bit time sensitive, but what's your opinions on what's been happening at COP26 so far?
I think there's been some great developments happening. I think especially around coal, which is the biggest emitter as an energy source in the world. And I think there's just a lot of countries that have realized that coal needs to phase out. Part of that's economically. It just doesn't make sense anymore with the falling price of renewables and batteries. But part of it's the recognition that we just can't keep burning coal. So I think some of those pledges are really good, international finance pledges to stop funding coal. And I think there's a lot of good things happening. I think like with a lot of climate, my general view right now is that there are good things happening. They need to happen faster and there needs to be more of them. I think with COP, it's kind of been the same thing.
And there's been a huge amount of hype around COP26. There is a COP summit every year. Do you have any idea why there's been much more hype around this particular summit?
I think part of it's that if I recall correctly, last year's was canceled. And I think that while there is one every year, something about every 5 years, it's like a bigger event. And so Paris in 2015 was 5 years ago from 2020. So it was kind of like last year's was supposed to be the big one every 5 years. And so it's just been delayed a little bit. So this was kind of like all the countries come back after Paris and say, okay, how are we doing? And what else do we need to do? And so I think in 2025 or 2026, we should expect a similar thing. And hopefully we've made a lot more progress towards 1.5 degrees at that point.
Yeah, COP25 was Madrid, December 2019. So yeah, there wasn't one in 2020.
Interesting. Yeah, that's my take on it probably.
Anything else you'd like to mention? I think I've run out of questions to ask.
No, I think just thanks for being interested in heat pumps, the most overlooked and boring climate solution, but definitely the most important just in terms of like what we can do in our lives to reduce our carbon footprint. It's in terms of the things that you have available to you if you're a homeowner or know people that own homes, getting more heat pumps in homes is one of the most effective individual actions that we can do. And I think it's great to raise awareness for the larger solution of kind of policy change and what we need to do to get them in every home in, I guess, around the world. I was going to say America, but it's true in your country and everyone else's. So yeah, thanks for putting this podcast together and spreading the good word.
And thank you so much for coming on the show. I think you're the first sort of real guest, to put it that way. We've had a few other people sort of join in, but you're proper professional in your field, an expert. So thank you so much for doing that and being, well, able to, you know, say yes. And, you know, I sent an email and you're like, oh, sounds awesome. And it made me feel really happy.
Ah, great.
To have that sort of validation. So thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about what you're building and excited to see where the podcast goes. So I'll say as the last note, everybody should subscribe to the podcast. And I think you guys have some merch on the website. So go and get some merchandise and support the show. But thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.